Well, it wasn't our vote, but there's no doubt people here did engage, watch. Some of us stayed up all night to watch that vote coming through. The decision has been made, though, something over 55% of people in Scotland wanting to stay and deciding to stay part of the United Kingdom, just under 45% saying we'd like to go for independence. But of course, the vote is in. Paul Cunningham is on the line from Scotland. First of all, though, we're going to hear a little bit about what it felt like early in the morning on Princes Street in Edinburgh.
Well, I think it's probably the right outcome for Scotland. It's certainly giving notice to Westminster about the problems that have arisen as a result of this referendum. And there's deep problems that are going to have to be faced in the Constitution for the whole of the UK.
I think it's sad for a lot of people, but I think most people could probably see it coming. It was very close, it was always going to be close. And I think that's the real victory here, is the fact that it was as close as it was, and that sends a bit of a message.
There's a large quantity of the country that still associate themselves with the Great Britain movement. Maybe 100 years from now we might have a group of people who might be prepared to die for Scottish nationalism, but you'll not find anybody on this street today that would.
I'm disappointed. I was a yes voter. But this is why we're a democratic country. People have spoken. It's a no vote, we're staying part of the UK. We all must now come together to be a better nation.
And that was voices there from Princes Street in Edinburgh, talking to our Europe correspondent Paul Cunningham earlier. Paul is on the line for us from Edinburgh. Paul, good morning. It's been quite an exercise in democracy. What's the big point that you would take from what we've witnessed over the last number of days, and indeed overnight?
I think that's just it, Christopher, and an amazing exercise in democracy where so many people came out and cast their ballots. Finding people to talk to on the no side, in other words, the winning side, was rather difficult this morning. But what I did see was most people saying that they wanted to move on and move on together on both sides of the argument. I don't believe that it's going to be hugely divisive. Politically, sure, I think the Scots and the SNP will be pushing to ensure that all of those powers are devolved to the Scottish Parliament. It will have implications for places like Northern Ireland. But on the streets, between the yes and no side, I think people will just move on now. It has been answered, it's a clear result, and that's that.
Paul Cunningham, Europe editor, thank you very much for all the reporting from Scotland. The time is 7 minutes to 9 o'clock.
David Farrell, professor of politics at UCD, is back in our studio, and also is Dan O'Brien, chief economist at the Institute of International and European Affairs and columnist with Independent Newspapers. David Farrell, to you first of all. We heard from David Cameron, the British Prime Minister, earlier in the programme, moving very quickly to say that he's going to honour this vow that was given by him and the leaders of the other two main parties, not just to voters in Scotland, but to voters in England, Wales and Northern Ireland, that more power is going to be ceded from London to them. What's that going to mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think he's giving a very subtle signal here that is being picked up now by the journalists quite quickly, that we have this bizarre situation that a no for Scottish independence has effectively, as somebody was tweeting earlier on, morphed into a yes for English devolution. We're heading into a British general election in a couple of months' time. All the main parties are now going to be focusing on England and the debate in England and devolution in England and how that's going to be done. Is it going to be an English Parliament, as clearly the Conservatives would want, or is it going to be some kind of regional devolution to the English regions, as the Labour Party would
want? This is the phrase, the West Lothian question. In other words, why do Scottish MPs, while they have their own Parliament, continue to have votes in an English Parliament, yeah, as they do now?
And you can imagine the scenario where a future Labour government, elected in the light of them solving the West Lothian question as Cameron would like to resolve it, in ending up in a bizarre situation where they have a minority in among English MPs, so they're wrong-footed.
Isn't this the win-win scenario for the Tories and for David Cameron?
And for UKIP,
that the likelihood of a Labour Party government, a single-party government, if they weren't to have MPs from Scotland or Wales, is next to none.
That's right. So that's why the battle lines are now going to be drawn very quickly among the mainstream parties in Britain as to the battle over England, and that's where the focus is going to shift. So Scotland's had its moment. Attention is now going to shift south.
Dan O'Brien, we've been assessing what the likely economic implications for here would be in the event of a yes vote. In the event of a no vote, does anything change?
I don't think it does, and I'd be slightly sceptical about the idea that everything, the British constitutional political order, is going to change with all sorts of consequences, including economic. All the way back to the 1600s, the evolution of the British political constitutional order has been almost uniquely stable. The British don't go for rupture and radical change. Just 10 years ago, people in the north of England rejected regional parliaments. Just 2 years ago, most of the big cities rejected having greater municipal powers, mayors. I don't buy the idea that the British people, the English, the Scottish, want a radical change to their constitutional political order. When they've had the opportunity to vote, including yesterday, they've tended to say no to it. There will be a review process, but I am not convinced that the change is going to be as big as most people are now sort of saying that this has let the genie out of the bottle and it's a game changer. I'm not at all convinced by that.
So from our purposes, can we simply ignore the result and move on?
Well, I'd never say ignore it. You know, it's something to watch, but looking at that history and that history of gradualism in Britain, I think there will be some devolution of powers. Things will change slightly, but I don't anticipate a radical change. So something like corporation tax, if Scotland and Northern Ireland have an opportunity to set their corporation tax at a different level, my hunch would be that it will be within a narrow band. They're not going to be given complete freedom to do it, but there will be a narrow band within which they can move it, so there won't be that much regional disparity within the United Kingdom as it stands.
David Farrell, while Britain has a general election next year, we're expecting to have another number of referendums next year, one of which would be to extend the voting age to people between the ages of 16 and 18. They voted, we gather, in very large numbers in the Scottish referendum. Now, we don't really know how they voted, how that vote broke down, but the fact is they did come out and vote.
That's right. I mean, there are some real positives from this recent referendum, and that cannot be denied. The passion in the debates leading up to the final result, passion including a lot of young citizens, 16 and 17-year-olds who came out in force before the election. Massive turnout, the highest turnout we've seen on these islands in any referendum, bar none. And of course, this huge youth vote. We don't know how it's going. The opinion polls in the eve of the election suggested that it was dividing pretty evenly among the younger citizens. But the fact was they were turning out and they were proving the point that I think needs to be demonstrated in the referendum we're going to have next year on this. You can trust young citizens to be engaged in politics.
Yeah, Dan O'Brien, I heard a number of people remarking overnight during coverage from the UK that to see somebody in a polling booth beside them voting in a school uniform was something that they felt glad about. Not that they didn't trust young people to vote, but they thought, yes, good luck to them.
I think there certainly is a case for a 16-year-old. I think back to a long time ago when I was 16. I'm not sure I was quite maybe mature enough to be making big decisions like that, but I certainly think there is a case for lowering the age, all right.
David Farrell, we spoke to Gerry Adams earlier on, who, again, it's part of Sinn Féin policy that they want a border poll. They will no doubt use the Scottish example as a precedent for it. Do you think that's likely in the next couple of years, given what we've just seen overnight?
I don't think so. I think this sort of... the Scottish thing proves that you can shoot that fox quite easily. There's a danger that if you run for this particular campaign too soon, you're going to lose it. I think it would be wise on the part of Sinn Féin just to buy their time and wait for a better opportunity than this.
As David Cameron put it earlier on this morning, as far as he's concerned, the independence debate in Britain has now been settled for a generation. David Farrell and Dan O'Brien, thank you both very much for coming into our studio. A reminder that there will be continuing coverage of the Scottish referendum result on Morning Edition on RTE News Now after this programme. It's a minute to nine.